Welcome to another edition of Grace Under Pressure, where my guest today is Diana Theodores. Those of you who know the show know that Grace Under Pressure is a show that poses questions to thinkers and doers like Diana, who are helping us come to grips with where we are in the world. Grace Under Pressure reveals what's too often dismissed as the soft stuff. You know, the caring, the connecting, the commitment we feel toward one another. Grace for me is the generosity we show, the respect we give, and compassion we demonstrate. And when you do it as a leader, it gets tough. But fortunately, we have voices and teachers and coaches like Diana Theodores to join us. Welcome, Diana.
Thank you, John. It's really lovely to see you again. It's great to be here.
Let me tell a few people about you. First of all, it is Dr. Diana Theodores. You have a PhD. You are presence and performance specialist. I love this mantra quote about you. Have I heard it before? If all the world's a stage, the greatest role you ever get to play is you. Yet your boldest, authentic self is so often left outside the door of your organization. So true, and Diana will tell us how to put that back in, okay? So for more than 25 years of experience, Diana started, of course, when she was about 15. She's been working on the live stage to real stage. Her clients range from, you name it, to finance, Formula One, energy, entertainment, retail, and real estate. She's a native New Yorker, but resides in London and works there. She's the director of Theater for Business, that's a number 4, and you can find her at DianaTheodores.com. I'll say that again. Her new book is Performing as You, How to Have an Authentic Impact in Every Role You Play, soon to be released as an audio book. So it's been a pleasure to introduce you, and welcome, Diana.
Thank you, John. Thank you very much. Great to be here.
So, people are under a lot of pressure these days. So, what are you hearing from your clients? You are based in the UK.
That's right. I'm based in London, and like all of us right now, spending a lot of the time in lockdown and on Zoom or on platforms that are virtual, and very much connecting to my clients in different organizations everywhere. And, you know, one of the things that I hear a lot about right now, a particular kind of pressure of, you know, the uncertainty of what's happening with their work, with their jobs, with the organization. There's a lot of restructuring going on. And so some of the things that are coming up, and I'm very touched by them, are things like having to maintain a sense of self-value when everything around you feels so uncertain. Having to feel and know where your own center is, that you need to constantly be weighing up what is worth fighting for, what's my sense of survival, can I rebuild again if I have to move on, or have I created a legacy in this company, and do I want to really hold on to that? So these are some of the things that are coming up, and I find those very moving and very powerful.
What you're telling me is this is very insightful. I haven't heard this a lot, Diana. And essentially, these are existential questions. Where do I belong in the world, and what world do I belong in, and how do I make a difference, and is this what I want to do?
So absolutely. There's nothing like this incredible sea of uncertainty and flux and of course, the pandemic, in which people are reevaluating what is really giving them meaning and purpose. But I think there's also something else happening. Because we're inside each other's offices and domestic environments so much more, in team meetings, for instance, I think people are getting a different sense of connection with their colleagues, with their teams. And there's another layer of humanity coming into the room, which is help building trust. And I think that's also very powerful.
Well, let's focus on that in a minute. And Diana and I go back a long, long way. We both taught together at Banff Center in Banff, Alberta, in Canada. And I vividly remember Diana teaching me, and I have stolen this line, but with attribution, that so often when we present in corporate, we're doing it in a conference table or even from a desk. So how do, and you said the world, the desk is your stage. What's the stage now, Diana, if we are virtual?
So. You know, I think it's the same. You know, basically, a stage is a place where you are creating an environment. It's an environment like any other. So whether we're on this platform right now, whether we're on Zoom in a meeting with our colleagues, whether we're making a presentation or any of these things, it's about, I think it's about a kind of ritual of empathy. I think that setting the stage for really being present with others is essentially about asking, how can I create maximum engagement? How can I help create the environment in which we can engage in ideas and really see and hear each other? So I think this is a particular stage right now that gives us it gives us a bit more of an opportunity to go into even more connection, deeper listening, really seeing and hearing each other. I think it can be actually quite a powerful container, this particular stage.
I'm glad you say that because you know me as an executive coach, and all of my coaching now is virtual, and I'm seeing some kind of a connection. I mean, not some kind. There is a connection, and people seem maybe more open about revealing parts of themselves. And we have a colleague, Cynthia Burnham, who's a guest on the show earlier, and she, like you, works in the field of presence, and she said that some dynamic about Zoom or video chat is our images, we're all the same size. The CEO is the same size as a frontline manager. And that's an interesting dynamic.
So. Yeah, that really is. You do have that sense of, on the one hand, we're all in our frames. But on another hand, and another way, you know, there is this wonderful equality. And in another way, there is a sense that we are all in this together, literally. We are in this container together. So I think it does afford us a slightly different kind of showing up. And I think it can be a virtue. Well, let's see how it goes.
And there's a humanness, human quality too, because your CEO or senior director may have a young child walk through or a dog interrupt or a cat or whatever. So, hey, that's life. And that makes us what? Human. Okay.
Human. So, exactly.
So I know normally I ask my guests at the end of the program about a story about grace, but I know you have a story you want to share. So let's get to it.
So. You know, John, I think for me, there are two, besides the big life moments, you know, witnessing my grandchildren's arrival for the first time, or those big life stories where grace and wonder are so much a part of a joyful aspect of life.
I want to interrupt. You're way too young to have grandchildren.
Oh, sure. Wonderful grandchildren. And acts of grace have been witnessing their arrival and encountering them for the first time. But, you know, in another arena, for me, the act of coaching affords for me almost a daily act of grace. And what I mean by that is, naturally, you know, John, that most of my coaching takes place face to face, live, with the whole body and the whole person and all of that energy. But whether it's in that rehearsal room or whether it's here on a virtual platform, for me, it's witnessing someone coming forward and sharing their whole humanity and their vulnerability, opening themselves to growth, and as a coach, directing them, feeding back to them, giving them pointers, and then watching them process that in the moment and stretching themselves when they themselves are under a great deal of pressure. I find that a really incredible act of grace almost every day. And that brings me to one other area of my life, which is the area that brings me to doing this work in the first place. And that's the moment of audience and performer. You know, in a theater space or in any arena where there is a performer, be that an actor, a musician, a singer, those moments when a performer takes to the stage and gives their gift to the audience, the gift of meaning, the gift of emotion, the gift of inspiration. And then that moment that you take in, you inhale it yourself as audience. What could be a more graceful, fluid, beautiful act of giving, of grace, than that? And so...
Oh, what a wonderful story. I'm just going to end the interview right now because there's nothing else I'm going to say or you'll say that'll top all that. But no, what a wonderful thing. I thought about grace for a long time now and never thought about it from, in a coaching perspective or performance aspect, but absolutely it's there. And, you know, grace, I say, is that catalyst for the greater good. And what you've just described resonates with that so much. So we're touching on this. What about... self-confidence. How can we project self-confidence in a virtual environment?
That's always a great question. I think, you know, all of us, no matter how, again, I encountered this in coaching, no matter how accomplished, how talented, how smart, how ambitious, how extraordinary everybody is in their own unique way, there's always this aspect about confidence. And I think it's much more to do with not, you know, do I have the charisma or the presence that it takes? I think it's always going back to what you believe in about yourself. And so preparing for any moment where you do have to connect to your inner confidence, I would say always think for a moment about the extraordinary evidence in your life of things that you've done or successes that you've experienced or resilience that you've exercised. Just remind yourself of that almost forensic evidence of those things in your life. Another thing is to stop that critic's voice that sits here, but replace it with the inner coach voice. You know, reframe. If it didn't go brilliantly, this pitch or this presentation or this meeting, you're an act in progress. We're all works of progress. And so you know, to tell yourself, I am managing, I'm getting better at this, it's going better, or, you know, those kinds of reframe stories. But the biggest one is, of course, your life story. And you've heard me talk about this a lot. The more you can reclaim and reconnect and reawaken your own story, and not take it for granted, but really value it. I think there's nothing like that to actually shore you up and give you your sense of roots and confidence.
I'm so glad you went through that itemization of one's own accomplishments, because we so often take it for granted because, well, we live them. and it's such a good reminder. And actually, you know, doubting oneself is not unhealthy. Failure to doubt oneself may be problematic. So this is such a good reminder. Now, let's segue a little bit, because you work with women in leadership. So, and so often, you know, for men have no problem asserting leadership.
Yeah.
Different story for women. So what do you do?
Well, first, I just want to back up a little bit, because it's interesting. I do think that there is a little bit of mythology around women's claim to leadership versus men's claim to leadership. But I do experience with women often a sense of slightly stepping back off of their achievements. So I mean, when it comes to women in leadership, there are a few things stand out for me, and they're very simple and obvious ones, but they really work. Remind yourself about who your heroines are. Remind yourself of your role models. Who are those people, especially the women, the visionaries, the pioneers, the role models that you celebrate? What is it about them that inspires you, and why? Why do those women inspire you? Because I think when we think about our role models and our heroines, we also recognize that the things that inspire us in our role models, those things that inspire us are in us. So it's really, really important to connect to that. And the big one is my mantra. You've heard me say it, and anyone who's read my book has heard me say it, and all of my coachees have heard me say it. Claim the I. a gracious, dignified claiming of the I, where you put yourself center stage with your accomplishments, does not mean you're not crediting your team and other people, but with integrity and grace to be able to say, I led this team very successfully, or I am very proud of the outcome of this project. You know, whatever that is, claim the I, because that gives everyone else permission to shine their light.
Right. And it's such a good phrase. Claiming the I is also the way you phrase it with integrity and grace. It does open the door, and also it affirms the value of the individual, but that person is self-confident enough to share. Am I correct? So,
absolutely. And the more you role model that for others, the more they give themselves permission to come forward, you know, and we have to do that. We have to encourage, celebrate, empower each other, and really bring that forward. And it's a beautiful thing. And,
something that you and I have talked about before, and it's the element of confidence. And itself, you know, confidence begins with belief in yourself and others believe in you. And then, but what I think is the most exciting part of confidence for a leader, and I know you teach this, is inspiring others to get them to believe in themselves.
I think, you know, I remember you saying something a long time ago in your Leading for Results program, and I always remembered it. And it was something about, I'm not quoting you, but it was something about, you know, a leader creates other leaders. And in a sense, you know, the most wonderful thing that a leader can do is being able to enable, promote, encourage, empower the talent around them to grow into their fullest selves. And one of the ways of doing that is, as a leader, is really knowing the stories of those you lead.
Oh, I'm so glad you touched on stories, because you taught me the story arc. And so I love that. Can you share that with us? Because I think it's important as it relates to what we're talking about. Am I putting you on the spot? So.
No, not at all. I mean, really, there are many, many different story arcs, as everyone out there knows. But I think, you know, one of the things you can do is really is just to think about, here's the beginning of the journey, whatever that journey is. And as you embark on it, you encounter, almost like the hero's journey, there's a calling. There's a moment where you hear the call of something, a challenge, something, and you step forth and you're about to take up that challenge, but you need some allies, you need some resources, you need to learn and to grow and to stretch. And so you go into that period of learning and taking some risks and stretching, and then you are out there going forth alone, as it were, meeting your challenges. And, you know, sometimes there's failures, and there's incredible, powerful lessons in failure, those crucible stories. And sometimes there are those moments of extraordinary courage, resilience, and success. But
we're living in an era now.
So. Really. And then there's that last moment, that moment of deep reflection of, and what are the insights? What are the powerful lessons? What are the key messages that I take from my experience in my life story, or all of my different experiences? And how do I leverage them so that other people are served? Because your stories are always in service to others, always.
What a wonderful leadership thought. Stories in service to others. Great thought. Now I want to harken back a little bit to what you said at the beginning when I asked you about leaders, what they were feeling. And it was kind of an existential question. But they're seeking clarity, you know, because they're being asked to provide clarity where there is no clarity. Do you have discussions with folks on that?
I certainly think there is a huge challenge right now in a lot of leadership with having to be reassuring, having to be honest. There's the balance between transparency, honesty, and duty of care. I think all of these things are coming up in very big ways. I mean, every day you're hearing stories about massive challenges that a leader has to face in talking to teams, talking to the whole organization, keeping people not just in survival mode, but in holding on to hope, mm-hmm. holding on to possibility, and working very, very much towards seeing what future possibilities there can be. So a sense of agility and openness and communicating vision amidst this uncertainty, I think, is a huge ask, but it's something that we need to hear. We can't transmit deep, alarming anxiety in terms of our energy as a leader. We have to transmit some kind of calm and gathering and creating courage and creating some kind of psychological safety in order to
And that comes from getting back to your earlier thought about your inventory for self-confidence. You've been through this before. No one's experienced a pandemic and an economic crisis and racial injustice, but they've all come together, not to mention other things factoring in the world. But we've been through crises before. And so deal with what you can deal. And it's a powerful thought. Now, one thing you and I have talked about before, and it's a favorite topic, and you are excelling this, is leadership as an act. When we say that, how do you explain that? So,
well, I mean, yeah. So the act of leadership, or if you like, the performance of leadership, it is about being utterly authentic. It is about connecting very deeply and truthfully and powerfully to yourself in order to connect to other people out there. But when I say performance, I mean it is the performance of being you, but with a great deal of skill. And what that means is understanding that you're not, you know, to be authentic doesn't mean you're habitually one thing. To be authentic means you play your range. You have many different personas, voices, energies, qualities, and you need to understand them, you need to use them, you need to play them, so you're not just showing up in one modality, which is not the this is who I am. The who you are is wonderfully large-ranged, a huge range of energy and dynamics and many different kinds of very wise voices that come into play depending on the context. So
I like how you relate this to performance, because I'm flashing back now, because when we team taught, Diana would just take over the stage and just radiate this confidence and I'll say charisma, and people were just magnetized by that. And so you are such a good role model for that. So using my performance, what do you advise with your clients when they screw up? How do they own it?
Well, again, you know, I think right now, you know, when you say screwing up, that can mean so many things to so many different people. Some people simply think they've screwed up because they haven't been word perfect with their script. Some people think they've screwed up because they didn't get every point across that they wanted to get across, or they might think they've screwed up because they have perceived something in themselves in their own little post-mortem moment. It didn't do what they had hoped it would do, or it didn't go exactly like they had hoped, or whatever those things are. But, you know, the more transparent, the more human, the more we own whatever it is going on, the better. And the only way we can do that, John, is to be absolutely present. I mean, to be really present in real here and now, so that you're using what's going on around you in real time, in the moment, and that's creating the connection. You've got to be able to just, you know, to flex with the situation that you're in.
Right.
And that's what people want. You know, we, as an audience, we don't want anyone to fail. We're sitting here in this room together because we want to engage in the ideas. So that's it. That's what the performance is about. And there isn't a screw up as long as you are investing in your own subject, as long as you actually care about what you're talking about. You can't fail.
I know. And it's interesting to hear. I know professional athletes, and I'm sure actors feel the same way if they're on stage. And one performance is not as good as another, but they, quote, fake it or whatever. They rely on technique. And that's so important for a leader to have a technique. Would you not say that?
Absolutely. And, you know, there are some incredibly simple but profoundly effective techniques. You know, and one of them is, and you've heard me talk about this a lot, is, you know, stop and breathe. Literally, instead of rushing, stop and breathe. Because in the moment of breathing, it clears your brain and you actually pause. And in that moment of pausing, you can think and you can also exude fantastic presence in that moment of just pausing. But before we've even started, there's one fantastic little micro rehearsal preparation moment. And that is literally before you go into that performance, just take even, it could be 60 seconds, it could be 5 seconds. Stop, ask yourself, what am I about to do? Why does this matter to me? And what's it all about? You know, just ask a clarification or objective question for yourself and answer it out loud. And you know why? Because if you ask the question and respond to it out loud, you hear your voice hitting the airwaves and you get immediate feedback. Yes, I am aligned and I feel connected and I feel grounded and I can invest in what I'm talking about.
I'm so glad you talked about saying things aloud, because we so often verbalize in our heads. And then when we actually say it out loud, oh, it does sound like this or whatever. So
it's a yeah. We are integrated beings. We are whole embodied beings. And so I can't emphasize enough. Don't constantly rehearse by simply reading things and thinking them. Actually physicalize and speak and articulate. Get your whole body energized and step into your thinking physically. It's magnificent. It works every time.
Absolutely. And I'm so glad you mentioned that, because we worked, you and I, when we were in Banff Center, we worked with Modus O, a dance company, and they taught me lessons that resonate and I share about the physicality of movement and leadership. And you just articulated it so well that we aren't just up here. We are physical beings. So.
And, you know, John, the thing, I'm so glad you brought up Modus O, this dance company that we worked with in Banff in the leadership program, because the other aspect of that, which I found so moving and so powerful, was to see leaders from all over witnessing their leadership challenges that they brought to the table being performed by a company of dancers as a way of feeding back to them what their challenges looked like and felt like. Through the power of movement, they could actually create that emotional connection. And do you remember seeing so many leaders' faces in complete astonishment and emotion saying, that's exactly what it feels like for me?
Yeah, and it's, yes, they were really connected in such a powerful way emotionally, but doing it through in a physical sense, and it reminds us that we are human beings, you know, so it's a good thought to remember. It's all of us. Let's use all of us. And I'm so glad you used the idea of the pause. We've been talking in this show with previous guests about the mental break, taking a pause from the Zoom call or the whatever it is. But when we're speaking, and this applies virtually, you tell me, silence has power. So.
Silence always has power, and silence is energy. Silence is not a dead thing. It's not a blank thing. Silence is like saying internally, so what did you think of that idea? Or have we all heard this? It's a moment to let the idea linger, float in the air. Let everyone process, including yourself. So silence is energy. And I think on a virtual platform, it's really important, because if we rush, you know, we're already dealing with cameras and we're mediating time zones and all kinds of things. So allowing time for all of us to settle, not only into our own bodies, but to in the words we're speaking, and allowing that container to fill so that we're all really thinking together.
I love that thought of grace, as silence as energy. Never heard that, and it's a resonate. So, Diana, you've been a terrific guest, and thank you. How can people find you?
Well, so first of all, John, thank you. I've loved having this time with you. It's been great. You can find me at dianatheodores.com, and you can also find me in my book, Performing as You, which you can find on Amazon or any bookstore you can order. You can also connect with me on LinkedIn, and I'm very happy to get communications that way. And I'd love to hear from you, and I'd love to work with you or talk to your organization or coach you. So do get in touch. And it's been great to have this chance to just shoot some ideas together, John.
No, you're just not shooting ideas. This is stuff you believe and you teach, and I'm a beneficiary of her, and I've seen you in action. You're the real deal, so it's an honor. So we're going to close out with that. Thanks, Diana.
Thank you. Take care.